शीतोष्णसुखदुःखेषु तथा मानापमानयोः।
हितात्मनः प्रशान्तस्य परमात्मा समाहितः शीतोष्णसुखदुःखेषु तथा मानापमानयोः। जित आत्मनः ऑफ वन हु हैज कॉन्कर्ड हिज माइंड प्रशांतस्य हु हैज अटेन्ड ट्रैंक्विलिटी बाय सच कंट्रोल ओवर द माइंड परम आत्मा द सुपर सोल समाहितः अप्रोच्ड कंप्लीटली शीत इन कोल्ड उष्ण हीट सुख हैप्पीनेस दुखेषु एंड डिस्ट्रेस तथा ऑल्सो मान इन ऑनर अपमानयोः and dishonor. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: for one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Purport: actually, every living entity is intended to abide by the dictation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. When the mind is misled by the external illusory energy, one becomes entangled in material activities. Therefore, as soon as one's mind is controlled through one of the yoga systems, one should be considered to have already reached the destination. One has to abide by superior dictation. When one's mind is fixed on the superior nature, he has no alternative but to follow the dictation of the Supreme. The mind must admit some superior dictation and follow it. The effect of controlling the mind is that one automatically follows the dictation of the Paramatma or Super Soul. Because this transcendental position is at once achieved by one who is in Krishna consciousness, the devotee of the Lord is unaffected by the dualities of material existence, namely distress and happiness, cold and heat, etc. This state is practical samadhi or absorption in the Supreme. Kindly repeat the translation. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached. For he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam वंदेहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratvushe Namaha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate. Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari. Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. This chapter is titled Dhyana Yoga. In this chapter, Krishna speaks at length on the process of Ashtanga Yoga, eight-limbed yoga. In the previous chapter, chapter 5, Krishna has talked about Nishkama Karma Yoga, which means performing activities without being attached to the fruits of those activities. Krishna has already underlined the importance of performing action vis-a-vis not performing action, and he has said that work in devotion is superior to inaction. And work in devotion implies that one must be detached from the fruits of one's actions. And at the end of the previous chapter, he has concluded by speaking briefly about Ashtanga Yoga or Dhyana Yoga. There are several paths to liberation by Ashtanga Yoga, by Nishkam Karma Yoga, and so on. One can all reach the point of liberation. So having talked about how the Nishkam Karma Yogi can attain liberation, then Krishna starts talking about how the Dhyana Yogi or the Ashtanga Yogi can also attain perfection by practice in his particular discipline. Now in the earlier verses, in the third verse and so on, Krishna has mentioned that there are two stages in the practice of yoga. One is called Aruruksha. Aruruksha means the beginning stage, Yoga Aruruksha. And the second stage is called Yoga Arudha. Arudha means one who has already climbed up, one who has already reached the high levels of Ashtanga Yoga. He is very, very advanced. So when one is a neophyte, Yoga Aruruksha, at that time one is still performing Nishkam Karma Yoga along with doing the practices of Ashtanga Yoga. But when one reaches the Yoga Arudha platform of being very advanced in Ashtanga Yoga, then one can give up the practice of Nishkam Karma Yoga. At this stage one is actually qualified to give up actions. Ashtanga Yoga is the path of attaining the super soul in the heart. The various processes involved are Yam and Niyam, which means the basic do's and don'ts for controlling the mind and the senses. The basic practices that we should deal with and do in our day-to-day life, and generally the yoga classes that are popular in the world don't talk much about Yam and Niyam. They only do the next two stages, which is Asana and Pranayam. Once you have started practicing do's and don'ts and moral conduct and so on, then you begin to practice certain sitting postures to control the life airs. And to make that control of life airs better, you do pranayama, which is breathing exercises, to control the subtle airs, which are called pranavayu. And by that, the process is to lift the atma gradually. And the yogi is supposed to use his skills and energies to focus the mind on the Lord within the heart. Dhyana vasthita tadgatena manasa pashyantiyam yoginaha. So then after having done asana and pranayam, the yogi finds that he is constantly disturbed in his mind by the sense objects. So the sense objects have to be pushed out. This is called pratyahara. And having pushed out the sense objects from the mind, the yogi now tries to focus the mind on something spiritual, basically the Lord in the heart. And as this concentration grows, it is called dhyana. And when the dhyana becomes fully concentrated, then it is samadhi, the perfection of the stage of dhyana or meditation. So the yoga rudra platform, the advanced platform, is reached at least only when one has reached the platform of dhyana. So it's a very difficult process. It's not easy. In the Srimad Bhagavatam we have so many instances of great personalities in previous ages who performed a great deal of austerities to perform Ashtanga Yoga and thereby attain perfection. But in Kali Yuga these things are not possible. So therefore the Bhakti Yoga process is most simple. Bhakti Yoga is a process of directly being in communion with the Lord by performing devotional service. The Ashtanga Yogi's process of trying to be in touch with the Lord is to focus the mind internally on the Super Soul, the Paramatma. But for the devotee, every act of his or her is actually is a contact with the Lord. When we chant the holy name, we are in touch with the Lord. When we hear about the Lord, we are in touch with Him. When we see His deity form, we are in touch with Him. When we honor His prasadam, we are in touch with Him. When we sweep the temple floor, we are in touch with Him. So in doing all these activities, it's a question of focusing the consciousness that one is doing it for Him. One difference between Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga is that in Karma Yoga, one offers the fruits of one's actions to Krishna, or at the least, one is detached from the fruits. But in Bhakti Yoga, it is the action itself that is offered to Krishna, not just the fruit of the action. From the beginning, from the very root, the root of any action is the thought, the plan. Before any activity is performed, there is a plan, a desire in the mind. Then the activity comes up. So for the devotee, from the very seed stage in the mind, oh, I want to clean the temple for Krishna. So from that very stage, that bhakti process has begun, the touch or the communion with the Lord has begun. The very thought is offered to Krishna, and the activity is offered to Krishna, and automatically the fruits are also for Krishna. So in this way, the bhakti process is much simpler, and it is also much easier to control the mind with the process of devotional service. Krishna, in the earlier part in the of this chapter, he has said, Atmaivahi Atmano Bandhur Atmaiva Ripur Atmanaha. That the mind can be a friend of the soul, or the mind can be an enemy. So we have a choice to make the mind one's friend or one's enemy. And then he goes on to say, Bandhur Atmatmanastasya Yenatmaivatmana Jitaha Anatmanastu Shatrutve Varte Tatmaiva Shatruvat. He says that when we make the mind our friend by controlling it, then everything goes nicely. When you control the friend, the mind becomes your friend. When you don't control the mind, then it becomes your enemy. So whether something is a friend or an enemy, even in this world, depends on so many factors. The same thing can become your friend today and enemy tomorrow. So also with the mind. So then, having controlled the mind, by the process of yoga, what benefit do you derive? That is the topic of today's verse, Jitatmanaha. So in this context, the word Atma refers to mind, not to the soul. Depending on the context, the word Atma can refer to the body, it can refer to the mind, it can also refer to the soul. So Jitatmanaha. So when one has, by the practice of yoga, conquered the mind, then one becomes Prashanta. Prakrishta Rupena Shantaha. One becomes completely peaceful. The mind is free from attachment and hatred. And along with that, Krishna says, Shitoshna Sukhudukheshu Tatha Manapamanayoho. Shita and Ushna, one becomes equipoised in heat or cold, Sukha and Dukkha, in happiness or distress, and even in honor and dishonor. So in all the dualities of life that characterize this material world, the yogi who has controlled his mind becomes equipoised. And therefore, Paramatma Samahitaha, one attains the Supreme Lord within the heart. In other words, one is able to perceive, one is able to be in communion with the Lord in the heart. That is the purpose of yoga. The word yoga comes from the word yuj. Yuj means to link up. The link is always there from Krishna's side, but not from the conditioned living entity's side. So when the conditioned living entity, by the practice of yoga, revives that link from his side with the Lord, then he is said to be a perfect yogi. So in order to see Krishna within the heart, we need the mind to start with, because we are in the conditioned state. So the mind is like a pair of spectacles that helps us to see the world and anything. We all see things according to our own biases, according to our prejudices, according to our state of mind. The same person, when we are in a good mood, we like him so much. Oh, he's such a wonderful person. But if we have not had good prasadam this morning, and we are sleepy, we are irritable, then the same person, when it comes in front of us, we don't like him so much. It's our state of mind that determines how we see things around us. So the mind is a spectacle. It colors our vision of the world. And usually, in the conditioned state of life, the spectacle is always tinted with some impurity. Red color, green color, brown color, black color. So therefore, depending on the different modes of nature under whose control we are, we see the world differently. But in order to see Krishna, the spectacles must be free from this color of the three gunas. None of these colors must exist or their combinations. If it is clear, transparent glass, then you can see clearly what is in front of you. So the mind is like that. Another example can be given, that is of a lake. The mind is like a lake. In a mind that is controlled, the water is very calm, it is very clear and transparent, and you can see everything. But the moment there is some agitating influence on the mind, then the mud from the bottom rises and shakes everything, and the water becomes muddy. You can't see anything clearly. So the yogic process aims at purifying this water so that the Lord can be visible clearly. This is what yoga is meant for. So in the purport here, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the living entity is meant to live under the dictation of the Supreme Lord. The living entity has to be under someone's dictation, meaning some superior entity. When the Lord sees that a conditioned living entity is trying to surrender to him, he renders all assistance. In every situation, the Supreme Lord is giving good guidance through so many different mediums. so that this conditioned living entity can come out of it. But the conditioned living entity, by misuse of free will, refuses to surrender to the Lord. So therefore, the living entity is forced to follow the superior dictation of the Lord's illusory energy, that is Mahamaya. Inasmuch as a citizen of a country who is happily following the orders of the government is able to live the life of a free citizen. He can come and go and do so many activities within the framework of the laws of the country. But if someone breaks the laws, then he is imprisoned and he loses whatever little freedom he had. In the same way, the living entity is not completely free in any condition, liberated or bound. The living entity has minute independence, but the perfection of that minute independence is to serve Krishna and to love Him. So when the living entity uses that minute independence for this purpose, he is properly situated and then he is in the spiritual world with Krishna. But if the living entity misuses that very tiny free will, whatever little will, whatever little independence that he has, not much, but whatever little is there, then he is sent here into the prison where he has to undergo much suffering. Therefore, the living entity that is intelligent surrenders voluntarily to the Lord and says, yes, in any case my position is to be controlled. My dear Lord, therefore I would be directly controlled by you. I do not want to be controlled by the illusory energy of Maya. So therefore the living entity surrenders to Krishna. This is the perfection. Yoga is meant for this. The path of yoga is meant to make us realize that we are not independent. We have to be dependent and surrender to something, either to Krishna or to Krishna's illusory energy. We have the choice, always. So the intelligent living being surrenders directly to Krishna. And the living being who is under the clutches of the illusory energy wants to transfer his surrender from Maya to Krishna can also do that. Although it is very difficult, once you are in the Maya, Maya doesn't want to leave you now. So you really have to prove that you are qualified to be coming out of Maya's grip. So Krishna says, Daivi hi esha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mam eva ye prapatyante mayam etam tarantite. He says, Maya is a very hard taskmaster or mistress, and she makes the living entity work hard. Jivera kore gadha, as Bhakti Vinod Thakur says. He makes a donkey out of the conditioned living entity. What is the characteristic of a donkey? A donkey simply works hard. That's all. Just for a little bit of grass at the end of the day. There is nothing substantial to be attained. And the donkey starts thinking and dreaming of some future that is full of some nice enjoyment and so on, which can never happen. This story comes to mind about how these two donkeys met, and after a long time, having been together in school, they met and they were catching up on old days, and then they said, well, they exchanged notes, what are you doing? So the other donkey said, I'm working with this washerman. So really, so what do you do? What work do you do? I carry the clothes from the washerman's house to the riverside, and the washerman washes the clothes there, and then I have to haul them back. And what does the washerman give you? He gives me a little grass to eat. So the first donkey said that, well, I also get only a little bit of grass, but I don't have to work for any washerman. I am free. So why do you work so hard for something that even I am getting? So the other donkey replied, I'm doing it for better prospects, because we have a bright future. I have so many things in the future that can happen, so many nice things that will happen. Really, so what is the bright future you have here? So he said, you see, one day I overheard the washerman scolding his daughter. And he was saying, because the daughter had made some mistake, so the washerman scolded her and said, you are such a foolish girl that if you do this mistake once again, I will marry you to my donkey. So the donkey said, I'm waiting for that day, and then I will take the whole inheritance. I will have this beautiful girl as my wife, and then my life is perfect. So this is the situation of the conditioned living entity. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the conditioned entity has become a donkey in this world, working hard here for an illusory better future which never comes. In fact, it becomes worse and worse. The longer the living entity remains in this material world, the harder it is to get out. Because the impressions of all the past activities, good and bad, become imprinted on the mind. The mind is a reservoir of all our past desires and experiences. And these desires and experiences will remain imprinted there for so long as the living entity is not liberated and delivered from this material existence. And even after millions of years, these impressions do not vanish. And they remain there embedded in the mind, and they may come up at different times. Srila Prabhupada gives examples at different times. He says, sometimes we dream of a golden mountain. We have never seen a golden mountain, but we have seen gold and we have seen a mountain. And then we put the two together. So the experience is always there, but our dreams mix up the experiences. And also it is said that you cannot think of anything that you have not experienced. So because the living entity has been here for untold number of lifetimes, millions of lifetimes, the living entity has been there and done it. Everything, the living entity has experienced everything there is to experience in this world, good and bad. From the demigods right down to the worms, we have been through it all. We have experienced everything. But in the current state, we seem to forget, we don't remember, because the current state seems to be the all in all. So because of these impressions having become stronger and more deeply imprinted in the mind, it becomes difficult for the living entity to change consciousness from the material to the spiritual. However, Krishna says, Mam eva ye prapadyante, one surrenders to me, the grip of this maya, which is very strong, mama maya duratyaya, very difficult to cross over, that becomes easy. Because this maya is Krishna's energy. Daivi hi esha gunamayi. It is daivi. It is Krishna's divine energy made of the three modes of material nature. Mayam etam tarantite. Then one can easily cross over maya and one can accept direct shelter. In other words, Krishna in this verse has given us only two choices. Either accept the superior dictation of maya or accept my direct superior dictation. So the intelligent jiva then has to make up the mind. And naturally, when we hear Bhagavad Gita, we can see crystal clear that the jiva is meant to surrender directly to Krishna. This will free the living entity from all the disturbing things that exist in this material world. The yogi is meant to reach this highest platform. The mind will have many things to say. So long as we have desires other than the desire to serve the Lord, all these other desires will speak in so many different voices. And they will come up and tell us many, many things. And therefore we should not take these voices very seriously, even if they seem to be very spiritual voices. One brahmachari was asked, why did you go to such and such place? You were not supposed to go. You were supposed to come here. Now I got a dream in which I was told that I should go to this place. We shouldn't take dreams so seriously at this stage of our spiritual development. Neither the voices in the mind should be taken too seriously. One of my favorite stories to illustrate this point, although it's not a nice story, is that of a murderer, I've said it before perhaps, of a murderer called Raman Raghav. In the 1960s, he had caused panic all over Bombay. And he had killed many, many people sleeping on the streets, many of the poor people, especially in the slums, who used to sleep outside on the pavements. And he would go with a stone and smash their heads when they were asleep. And he was a serial killer. So he must have killed hundreds like this. And there was complete panic all over Bombay. And he was not traced. Ultimately, after many, many months, somehow or other, he was caught. And then he was brought before the judge. And the judge asked him, he said, okay, all the evidence aside, all the sentence aside, everything, you are admitting that you killed these people, just tell me why. I'm just curious to know why you did all this. And he said, the Lord in the heart is directly instructing me. He told me that this is what he wants, and therefore I have done it. Because it is God's desire. His voice from inside has told me. Of course it was not God, it was his own crazy mind speaking. So when we have an impure heart, when we have a mind that has many other desires other than the desire to serve the Lord, all those voices speak in so many languages, so many ways, telling us so many things, and we cannot distinguish what is what. So even as devotees perhaps, as practicing devotees, sometimes we may get some inspiration, we may get some idea in the mind. So we must put it to the test. It's not that every idea that comes to our mind is God's gift to mankind. That this is the what, this is my mission for life. Not necessary. We should put it to the test. Guru Sadhu Shastra test. We should consult with devotees who are mature and who understand Krishna consciousness. We should see whether this is in accordance with the Shastra and the teachings of the previous Acharyas, then we can understand whether it is bona fide or not. It may be correct, it may not be correct. So we must test it out. When the mind is pure, then the voice of the Lord can be heard very clearly. In other words, for the living entity to be in constant communication with the Lord, the mind has to be controlled. Controlled mind means a pure mind. Your mind cannot be controlled if it is not pure. If there are other desires, then it cannot be a pure mind. So then the Lord's voice in the heart is covered over by so many other voices. Now I am speaking here, giving this class. At this moment, if there are 15 other people also speaking simultaneously as loudly, then you cannot hear clearly what anybody is saying. Similarly, the Lord is speaking in the heart. He is speaking what he is speaking in the Bhagavad Gita also. Come to me, surrender to me, become my devotee. But the voices of our own desires, material desires, are also speaking, saying so many things, contrary to what the Lord wants. So we listen to whichever voice is the loudest. And usually, if the heart is full of material desires, and those voices are the loudest, so we listen to them. So therefore, the Paramatma Samahitaha words here indicate a stage, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladeva Vidya Bhushan, of a mind that is absorbed in Samadhi, constantly fixed in trance, in Krishna conscious thoughts. When that is there, then automatically one is in touch with the Lord and one can see everything as Krishna's energy. Sarva bhuta sthamatmanam sarva bhuta nichatmani ikshate yoga yuktatma sarvatra samadarshanaha. So Krishna says that the moment one sees, one is of this understanding with a controlled mind, sarvabhutastham atmanam, sarvabhutani chatmani. One sees me in all living beings and all living beings in me, Krishna says. So when the mind is controlled and peaceful, the mind is transparent like a clear, beautiful, transparent lake, then we can see all living entities residing in Krishna. We can see that all living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. And we can also see Krishna in everybody's heart. Ikshate yoga yuktatma sarvatra samadarshanaha. Then we see this everywhere. We see Krishna everywhere. Yomam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pashyati tasya ahamna pranashyami sachavena pranashyati. Again, a similar idea Krishna says. Therefore, one who sees me everywhere, in all things, and he who sees all things in me, I am never lost to him, nor is he ever lost to me. In other words, the link between the conditioned living entity and the Lord and the heart becomes fixed. Now the living entity has fixed himself to the lotus feet of the Lord. Now it cannot be shaken. So Krishna is saying that now that his mind is pure and clear and he has taken shelter of me, now this combination will not be broken. Now Krishna will give protection. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam
sharanam. So Krishna promises all protection for one who has surrendered to this. In this way, for the yogis, especially the bhakti yogis, matters become very simple. We surrender to the process of bhakti yogi and Krishna takes care of the rest. All other forms of yoga depend
on the performer's ability and expertise and austerity and so on. But in bhakti yoga, apart from our efforts, we largely depend on Krishna's mercy. It is Krishna who will control the mind. We have Sankirtan Prabhu sitting here. He has written a very nice book which he has given to me for reviewing. And he has elaborated on all these different yogas, what the different types of yoga are, and how they are connected, and how they gradually connect up one by one and culminate in bhakti yoga, and how bhakti yoga is so sublime because it's easy and it depends on Krishna's mercy, because it flows down. The other processes of yoga, they are deprived of this one fundamental point of mercy. The devotee is constantly praying for Krishna's mercy. The devotee doesn't try to control his or her mind solely by personal effort. In addition to personal effort, the devotee is surrendered to the Lord and prays to the Lord for protection. What is the meaning of protection? Protection doesn't only mean physical protection of the body. It's protection of the consciousness, protection of the mind. Then Krishna reciprocates with the desire of the devotee and sits on the lotus of the heart of the devotee and takes charge. Now I'm in control, don't worry. It's just like Krishna sitting there all the time in the heart, even before, when we have no regard for Krishna, but he's still there. But because we want to take charge of our lives, so he's sitting in the corner saying, all right, you do your thing. Well, when we realize it's futile and then we take shelter of Krishna, then he says, all right, now you surrendered, so now I'll take charge. Yes. Just like when Arjuna was confused, he surrendered. Till that time, Arjuna was taking charge of his own life. But when he realized it was futile, and he spoke, Karpanya Doshopahata Svabhava Prichami Tvam Dharma Sammoodha Chetaha. He says, I do not know what is my duty, what is my dharma at this stage, what should I do, what should I not do. So now you please tell me. Then Krishna took over. Till then Krishna was only his friend. Krishna didn't take control of Arjuna's life till that time. But now that Arjuna surrendered to him, then Krishna took charge. All right, now we don't worry. So in the same way, for a devotee, there is complete protection. Just like a child surrendered to the parent, doesn't have to worry about anything. Similarly, the devotee doesn't have to worry. Krishna takes care of everything. Hare Krishna. So we'll leave some time for questions and answers. Any questions? Yes. The question is that why is spiritual life more difficult than material life? Well, it's not more difficult actually. Material life is a million times more difficult. But in spiritual life, we are flowing against the current of the world. And naturally, when you're flowing against something, it's more difficult in that sense. But you're slowly moving, because you're connected to the shore. You're holding onto the chain and you're moving slowly. There is a difficulty because you're going against the current. And you may see, oh, here's this one. You're just flowing down with the current so easily, just flowing along. No effort, no difficulty. But there is difficulty because this person is going into the sea. He's going to lose his life. He's just going to finish going towards end. There's no future for him. He's just flowing along. He's not even considering his conditioned existence. He doesn't even think that he is bound. One of the characteristics of Maya is that the more bound one is, the more one tends to think one is free. The bound conditioned living entity thinks, I'm free, I can do anything I like. So even those who are flowing with the current, because they're flowing, it's natural in this world. So because they're flowing, they think they're free. But they're not free, it's the current that is pushing them. They're just sitting there, just being pushed along. But the people that they don't even have any idea of the current. The devotees, they have an idea of the current. They're because they're flowing against it. They have recognized that there is such a current. I don't want to be flown away. I want to reach my destination. So they slowly, gradually pull. But because sometimes devotees let go of the chain for a while, then they push back and they again grab hold of the chain. So somehow it's back and forth, two steps forward, one step back. It goes on like this. The difficulties in spiritual life also come because of our past conditionings, naturally. And everybody who comes into spiritual life has come with a baggage, so much excess baggage, of so many ambitions, material desires, all stored up in the heart for millions of lives. So they will get cleansed if we follow the process properly. But it's certainly better than being out in the outside world. Every devotee who has left the movement, thinking that the outside world is better, surely comes back after some time, much chastened, much humbled by the experience in the outside world. And Krishna gives his own loving touch. And that's why Krishna says we must have the shikha, so that when we go away, you can catch, hey, where are you going? Come back. Any other question? Come on. Yes. Can we switch off that? I think I can't hear the question. Maybe that switch over. Yeah.
Krishna,
Then you have to follow Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's instruction. One Chinese devotee wrote an email 2 days ago. What is the real meaning of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's statement? He asked a question in the email that every morning, every night before you go to sleep, you should beat your shoes 1,000 times with your shoes, and then in the morning wake up and beat it with a broom or something like that. You know, there was some quote. So what is the meaning of that? So obviously it's not something literal. But the idea is that we have to use our intelligence to control the mind. The mind will say so many things, and the intelligence becomes strong by the process of hearing. Siddhanta boli na karo alas. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, just because this is Siddhanta philosophy, they said, don't become lazy to hear it. Because when you hear it, then you will actually become attracted to Krishna. Your intelligence will become strong enough to be attracted to Krishna. So sometimes devotees only like to hear pastimes. That's good, that's very nice, we must have. But also philosophy is important to understand clear Siddhanta. Kaviraj Goswami says, yes, this will help you to develop attraction for Krishna, and then you can hear the pastimes and relish the pastimes much better. So therefore the intelligence has to become strengthened by hearing philosophy, reading philosophy, hearing and chanting about Krishna, chanting the holy names, hearing and so on. Then when the intelligence is strong, then the mind can be controlled to surrender to Krishna. The mind is like a rebellious child which is constantly saying no, no, no. Whatever you say, he says no. But sometimes you have to be strict with that child, say no, do it like this. So we have to be strict with the mind. Any other questions or comments? Yes. How? How can we chant? Offenselessly. Well, by avoiding the offenses. We should know what are the 10 offenses, the 11th offense, and having understood what are the offenses, consciously we should try to avoid them, and we should also pray to Krishna for and the holy name for mercy so that we can chant offenselessly, and we should do what is necessary to chant properly at a practical level. Yes, the only reason we do not become pure devotees overnight is because of offenses. Otherwise the process is very rapid. But in this world, and as we come back to the first question raised, so much baggage is there. So because of that baggage, these offenses are done. And therefore, we are not able to relish the true fruit of Krishna consciousness. But with sincere endeavor, and use of proper intelligence, we can eventually reach that platform. So we stop here. It is 6:30. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna.